And like to convene the Finance Committee. We are one short of a quorum, so Representative Huntley, you're familiar with the routine. We'll have you present the bill, but we won't take any action until we have another member arrive. And if you're done by the time that happens, if you'd like to stick around for the vote. But at any rate, if you could explain House Resolution Number 8, Representative Huntley, and then we'll take questions.
Okay, this relates to a bill in Congress that would extend the stimulus package, so it's not part of the health care reform bill, it's part of one of the jobs bills, that would extend the federal government paying for 62% instead of 50% of our medical assistance costs for 6 months. Currently, the stimulus item where the feds increase their payment for medical assistance is to terminate on January 1st of next year, and this bill would extend it for 6 months. And both the governor and the House have included that money in their budget. That's the $408 million, and that number changes a little bit now and then. But so originally it looked like they were going to pass that in April. Then it looked like they were going to pass it in May. And we're starting to hear rumors from various people that it may not be till the fall. And that would put our budget in a very difficult situation. So there's been a movement around the country to have various state legislators and governors request that this bill be passed, or the stimulus extension be passed as quickly as possible. And that's what this is, a resolution asking the governor to request from the legislature in Washington that they pass this the bill that would allow us to get that $408 million.
And as some of you know, I also communicated with an individual letter on that, and this would then create an official House position with this particular resolution requesting early action. We've had now for some time a quorum, so I'll officially convene the meeting. And Representative Biskins, have you had a chance to read the minutes?
Yes, I have, Mr. Chairman. Okay, and I'd like to move approval.
Okay, Representative Biskins moves approval of the minutes for April 21st. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Huntley, would you like to move the resolution?
Mr. Chair, I would move House Resolution 8 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any further discussion on the resolution? Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Huntley, is there a companion resolution moving through the Senate at this time?
I do not know. I just don't know.
Mr. Chairman, question of you, or maybe some people who have been around longer than I. Can a House resolution move forward on its own and be sent to Washington simply by an action of our body, or must there be a companion resolution passed by the Senate prior to it moving forward?
The question of the answer to your question, and then maybe Representative Huntley might want to chime in, but if this were a House file, then that would take action by both bodies for it to be forwarded on and signature by the governor. This is purely a House resolution, so this could go forward from a single body.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Just to that point, Representative Carlson's right. It's a similar thing that happened last year. If you remember, on 2 years ago, we did a Cuba resolution that got to the governor's desk and he vetoed. Mm-hmm. We then turned around and did a House resolution and passed it and just sent the House resolution on. So in a bill form, it takes governor's signature. In this form, as just a House resolution, it only takes action by the House.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Any further questions then on the resolution? Well, seeing none, then Representative Huntley renews his motion that House Resolution Number 8 be recommended to pass. And that's a little different motion. We wouldn't place it on the general register, being that it's a resolution. It just goes forward to the House floor. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Yep, thank you, and we'll wish you well with a very busy committee today. We now have House File 3281, Representative Murphy. Representative Murphy, did you want, are you ready, or we can drop down to another bill if you, I noticed you were conferring there with some of the pension staff.
I want to get it over with, Mr. Chair.
Okay, sure. It's your call.
I'm so confused.
Let's see, it's done here. The chair moves the State Government Finance Division report for House File 3281, the first committee engrossment. Any discussion? That's the State Department's. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Murphy, would you care to move the bill?
Mr. Chair, I move House File 3281, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, and Representative Murphy, you have an amendment for us in the packet. Would you like to adopt the amendment to put the bill in the form that you'd like to present it?
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of...
Or I guess you have two. So
H32818A.
Okay, the A8 amendment is moved by Representative Murphy. Do you want to comment on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, this is a technical amendment, some of it, most of which has been passed in the other, either in government operations in or in State Department, but for some reason it didn't get into the committee engrossment, and it's at this point mostly technical, Mr. Chair, and I need it because I need an engrossed copy that works.
Okay. Any discussion on the amendment then? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Murphy on the second amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of H3281 12A.
Okay, the motion is before us, and Representative Murphy on the amendment.
Mr. Chair, this amendment refers to Article 12 and 13, and it was Representative Thiessen's bill on MRF, and MRF is a closed pension plan, but which is one that is in the most trouble and needs immediate help, and it provides for an additional one-time funding of $10 million this year, and in addition to the $9 million that we regularly, that's part of the base, and it will also carry a $15 million additional tail in 12 and 13.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion on the amendment? Okay, seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Oh. Aye.
We're in the middle of a vote, but I'll suspend the vote, Representative Thiessen.
Is this Representative Kiffmeyer's amendment?
No, this is Representative Murphy's amendment. It's the one that I called you. It's the one that I called you about last night, and we just unfortunately didn't connect.
12A.
12A.
Yeah, I'd like.
What it does is it puts $10 million in the bill.
Yes.
And it has a $15 million tail.
I'd like to offer an amendment on line 1.8, and to delete 35 million and put it to 27 million.
Whatever you can work out.
That would be increasing the tail to 27 million?
No.
Oh, what are you, what are we,
portion. Oh. This has to do with the local portion.
I just got the amendment. Oh, the, this is dealing with the local
this
portion.
This is the local portion, yeah.
Okay, so could you give me that one again?
Yeah, on line 1.8. So this sets a floor for what the locals have to provide, which was not in, this is Representative Kiffmeyer's work. We're going to reduce that from 35 million to 27 million for the floor. Because that was what has kind of been agreed to going forth. It's, the bottom line numbers is not going to get this fully funded, but I think we're get, it's going to get us a long way to getting this fully funded, and I think it's the proposal that is going to actually, that everybody can come around and agree on. You know, dropping the state share down to 15 million from what was going to be significantly higher than that, which is what Representative Kiffmeyer's amendment does. But the prior allocations had the city, they have been budgeting for about the 27 million as opposed to the 35 million. And so this just makes everybody kind of within their, what they've been anticipating.
Okay, this is an amendment to the amendment, and Representative Murphy?
I would incorporate that, Mr. Chair.
That's incorporated then in the amendment. Okay, any further discussion, Representative Biskins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering about process. We started the vote on the amendment, and then you called for the ayes, and then you suspended the vote. Do we not have to rescind the vote before we can take up the... I just want to make sure it's done in the right process.
Probably should have said any objection to... that at that point we hadn't called for the nays. If we had called for the nays, clearly then at that point the amendment would have been adopted, but then it would have been in order to have an amendment offered at that point anyway. Procedurally, I think we're okay being that the nays were not called for, but we can do it either way. You're the ranking minority member, just want to be appropriate in your eyes as well. Okay, he's fine with it. So being that we didn't complete the vote, we had the amendment to the amendment incorporated then. And any further discussion then on the amendment?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the biggest concept here is providing the floor, and the idea behind that was so that the tendency is that when the calculations are done, the tendency is to have wild swings. Highs and lows, and it's just, this is a 20-year kind of thing that goes on, and my effort at setting the floor higher initially was so that you could, in what I call the fat years, be able to fund it because you have a little bit more resources to deal with, so that in the lean years it wouldn't be so hard on you when it's hard anyway. And so the more you reduce that floor, the more you lessen the benefits. And I look at this as saying for these local employers, when they have the floor, they have a greater predictability. And when they keep the number a little bit higher, you have a greater predictability. You can budget and go through. And not only that, this fund has a chance, if the floor is set a little bit higher, to be able to get this actuarially sound earlier, which down the road may mean a couple years could be cut off from paying into this fund, depending on what the market does over the next 20 years or so. And if you reduce that floor, then it only increases the likelihood of more swings. So while I would prefer this $35 million, I know that Representative Thiessen has talked with the stakeholders, and it seems as though for them this seems to be a better compromise at setting that floor at 27, but I just wanted to explain why I was making that proposal, and it was in their interests, and also to get this fund actuarially sound and on strong footing earlier, so we don't have to come back to deal with this.
Okay. Any further discussion? Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Kiffmeyer. I'm just curious, is there any estimation, or maybe Representative Thiessen, whoever, is there any estimation related to how long it'll take to get this actuarially sound in terms of the difference between 35 and 27? Is there any best guess out there related to the differences?
Representative Thiessen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Broad, I think the way to look at it is with the $35 million, it would be actuarially sound in 2031. We are not actually going to get to actuarially sound unless we have good investment returns by doing it this way. But this makes a big, this is a big step in the right direction. So we're just, basically, we're not fully funding it.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor of the 12A amendment as amended indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Murphy, then, on the bill, now that we have it in the form that you would like.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This is the omnibus pension bill, including MRF, Articles 12 and 13. Article 1 is probably the one that you've heard about the most, and that is the sustainability article. And it provides sustainability for all the plans, MSRS, PERA, TRA, Duluth Teachers, and St. Paul Teachers. And we have about a half a billion dollar savings in this bill per year. Total. And for MSRS, we have about $52.8 million. For TRA, $135 million. For PERA, $235 million of savings. And we have increased contributions and for the employers and the employees in every plan. And the article and bill are supported by the Teachers Retirement Association, the MSRS, the PERA, the Duluth Teachers Retirement Association, the St. Paul Teachers, and the MRF. Other organizations that support the concepts in Article 1 are MAPE, AFSCME, Minnesota Retired State Employees Association, the Minnesota School Boards Association, the League of Minnesota Cities, the Minnesota Intercounty Association, the Minnesota Police Officers, the Minnesota Professional Firefighters, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, the Retired Educators and Administrators of Minnesota, the MinSCU Interfaculty Association, Education Minnesota Retired, Minnesota School Boards Association, Minnesota Rural Education Association, the State Auditors Volunteer Firefighter Relief Association Working Group, and the Association of Minnesota Counties. So just about everybody supports the concept. And the concept is that it is a shared sacrifice. Employees are going to pay more. Employers are going to pay more. There are going to be reductions or no or freezes on cost of living increases until certain percentages are reached. And so it's we know that it is not going to happen overnight. We know that it is going to take a while, and that but in the end, we are going to have sustainability. This was not a problem that was created that we can point the finger at any group or any person to say, you're the blame. It's part of the world economy, part of the national economy, and the downturn that all funds, that all monies that were investment funds were tanked. And this is our solution to getting out of the tank and having a stable outlook for the people that we have promised, that they worked many times in many cases over the years in in many negotiations that took place in the cities and the counties and the state, they negotiated less raises so that they could get stronger pensions. And we have to provide that stabilization for them. This was a promise made, and it should be a promise kept. And I can answer questions.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Murphy, I'm just curious. You said just about everybody. I'm curious about who doesn't fit into that category. Who's not quite happy?
We don't have a rousing endorsement from Education Minnesota.
Representative Broad, were you done?
But we have a rousing endorsement from Education Minnesota retired.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Murphy, do we have a tepid endorsement from Education Minnesota? Do we have a meek and mild endorsement from Education Minnesota? Or do we have a no endorsement from Education Minnesota?
Representative Murphy.
At this time, we have silence.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion? Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Murphy. I'm looking through this big bill, and I can't seem to find the page. But I'm wondering if you could talk about the MSRS state legislator pension options. Does this bill increase the pensions of current or former legislators?
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair,
and if so, why?
No, it doesn't, but it does allow in the section of on MSRS Article 4, page 84, unclassified. Up at the top of the page of 85D. Members of the legislature who are covered by the retirement plan governed by this chapter on July 1st, 2010 may, on or before the end of the member's seventh year of legislative service, or January 1st, 2011, whichever is later, the member may elect to have future retirement coverage by either the General State Employees Retirement Plan governed by Chapter 352 or the Unclassified State Employees Retirement Program governed by Chapter 352D. The election must be made on a form prescribed by the director and is irrevocable. And that is something that we are allowing all other public employees to make that choice. And so there was a bill by Representative Mahoney and Senator Tomasoni that has been introduced for several years now, and they were saying that state legislators should be treated like all other public employees.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Murphy, well, I believe that this likely will increase the pensions, because if you get to move into a defined benefit plan, that certainly would give legislators the option of picking the choice that is more beneficial to them. And I guess I'm wondering why we're making more promises to not just legislators but all public employees when we're having the pension problems that we're already having. Why would we want to increase legislators' pensions when we've got so much unfunded liability as it is?
Mr. Chair, Representative
Murphy.
Kevin, it was a promise that is already allotted to all other state employees, has been, and legislators were left out intentionally at one point in time. 1997. And it was that group of legislators that were left out.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there are state employees that are unclassified right now. I don't know what the percentage is. But this bill would then allow them to?
They already can.
The unclassified already can. Okay.
They already can and have been able to right along.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Murphy. I'm, too, trying to figure out this section and how, as a legislator, I vote on something that has the potential to increase compensation for current sitting legislators. And so when you look at both the Constitution and the appearance of a conflict of interest, I'm just trying to understand how this might impact people who are currently sitting. And I honestly don't know the answer. I'm just trying to figure out how this impacts us. And so I don't know if you or Representative Thiessen have a thought on that.
Representative Thiessen.
Well, and I think I didn't support this in Pension Commission, but I understand going forward. I think we're making an assumption that the choice that someone makes, either to be in a defined benefit or a defined contribution, is going to increase or not. I don't think we can know that when the person makes their choice. So I don't think this is fairly stated that it's actually going to increase anybody's compensation. And we, in fact, in the Pension Commission see over and over people coming back wanting to change their choice because the one they made was actually turning out now to be the worst choice, right? And so I don't think that the giving someone the choice is actually increases and increasing anybody's compensation or not. The same amount of money, I think, would be going into one or the other type of pension. It's just what the benefit is on the back end. So kind of behind the veil, if you will, when you're making the choice, I don't think you know if it's going to be higher or lower. So I don't think it's fair to characterize this as increasing anybody's compensation.
Thank you, and I appreciate the explanation, Representative Thiessen. I'm not trying to characterize it. I'm just trying to understand it a little bit. But why don't we just shift all legislators in a defined contribution mode? I mean, why wouldn't we just do that rather than give them the choice over which?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
We did that in 1997, but we didn't give them the choice of making the selection. But all legislators since 1997 are in a defined contribution.
So then just to clarify, so thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Murphy. So this is really for legislators that are currently sitting who were elected before 1997. Is that correct?
No.
After 1997.
Yeah. That's correct.
Okay, got it.
Okay, any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then Representative Murphy renews her motion that House File 3281, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And
overwhelming.
The next bill is House File 3660, Representative Conan.
Did he call for a vote?
Yes.
We both. I must have been drifting off.
There were about four yes the Senate. Three no's.
And while he's coming
but
forward,
they were all very quiet.
Representative Murphy, would you care to move the bill to 3660?
Retirement. Do you want to put your money in the market?
I would say
Representative Murphy. Representative Murphy, would you care to move House File 3660?
Mr. Chair, I move House File 3660 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us, and Representative Murphy, I understand you have an amendment.
Yes, I do.
I think you may be still back on pensions. I'll give you a second to get settled in there.
Is that 2514? Right. Mr. Chair, I move adoption of A10-2514 amendment.
Okay, and that motion is before us. Representative Conan on the amendment.
This is a claims bill.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, it's a delayed all amendment. It includes all the decisions made by the committee.
Okay, so this puts the bill in the form that you'd like to have it in.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, any discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Conan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. House File 3660 is the work of the Joint House Senate Subcommittee on Claims, so this is the claims bill for the year. The bill appropriates $91,509.39 from the general fund for fiscal year 2011 to the State Department of Corrections and the Office of the Court Administrator. Section 1 of the bill appropriates $3,692.83 to the Department of Corrections for sentence to service and community work service claims that were under $500 and claims it already paid. The bill, this section also appropriates $53,767.46 to the Department of Corrections to pay 7 claims by prisoners who suffered permanent partial disability while working at assigned duties in prison, and 2 claims by persons who suffered permanent partial disabilities while working in the sentence to service program. This also including payments for medical services provided to one of the claimants, and this is at the medical assistance rate. Section 2 appropriates to the Office of the Court Administrator $34,049.10 to pay William Howard Hines $50 a day and lost wages, and this is for 389 days he spent in prison. beyond time he would have served if the trial court had not made a sentencing error. So due to a sentencing error, he spent 389 more days in prison than he was supposed to. The sentencing error was eventually dealt with by the Court of Appeals decision, and at that time he was released from prison. Mr. Hines will be required to pay fines and restitutions he owes, and he agreed to that in committee, that he would pay those before he received any cash. Mr. Hines also agrees to not seek credit against any future sentences for time mistakenly served, and is now being paid for through this appropriation. Mr. Hines must sign a release agreeing that payment is full and final. This includes his claim against the state or any political subdivision, or also any employees of the state or political subdivision. And Mr. Hines will not request or accept credit against any future sentences since he's being awarded a payment for the time mistakenly spent. And the court administrator will reduce the amount of the payment if Mr. Hines should receive any credit for wrongful imprisonment covered by this payment. And we put all these things in place to try and cover all the bases so that he would be treated fairly, as well as taxpayers who are covering this. To summarize, Department of Corrections will receive $57,460.29 to pay out claims, and the Office of the Court Administrator will receive $34,049.10, and so the total appropriations from the general fund is $91,509.39, and that's the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, are there any questions on the bill?
Yes.
Representative Schmansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the author. Just out of curiosity, I'm reading the amendment, and 4 of the claims are for left-hand injuries suffered at the MCF Faribault. Is there something going on there that is, it seems very unique that all the claims would be for the same a similar injury.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Szymanski, you know, that's very alert of you to notice that. I actually hadn't noticed that, and I don't know if there's anything going on there. We just took the claims as they come in and made decisions on if they we thought they should be receive a benefit from the state for the claim. The committee considered over 100 claims, and we reduced it down to this number. Back to your question, if there's some kind of pattern or something there, I'm unaware of, but I don't know if Mr. Lindeke has anything to add to that. But I can't answer why all I've been.
Mr. Lindeke, did you want to comment?
Mr. Chair and Representative Szymanski, they have a wood working shop at Faribault, which is why, of course, these little cuts on the fingers and sometimes big cuts on the fingers take place. And what's amazing to me is the different value between the pinky and the next finger and one little, if you have just a tip. And we had two claims where it was less than 1 centimeter cut off of the end of the finger. Therefore, those people get nothing. So it's an all of these are at workers' compensation, out of the workers' compensation schedule. And as to what's happening at Faribault, it's the place where these things happen. They all indicate on every one of these claims that they were trained, but something happened during the cutting of the wood or some other process that caused parts of their fingers to be cut off. I guess it's not uncommon. The real thing to do would be to talk with the Department of Corrections, I guess, about trying to find some way that it doesn't happen so often down there.
And if anybody would be able to see if there was a pattern, at least over several biennium, it would be Mr. Lindeke. He's dealt with several claim bills over the years. So.
There have been many of these, Mr. Chair, over the years, and mostly from Faribault.
So maybe the signal there is that they ought to look at their curriculum or whatever on safety to make sure that these things don't happen. Representative Biskins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Coonan, help me understand the process. Sure. I mean, I see the original bill, House File 3660, was introduced on March 15th of 2010, and the total claims in the original bill come to just over $3,000. Now, I'm assuming all of the claims had been analyzed by the claims committee up to that point, and thus this bill. And now here we are less than a month later, and the bill, or just over a month later, I'm sorry, the bill is ballooned to $91,000. So maybe I just don't understand the process when the claims committee meets. Were the claims in the delete all amendment previously analyzed by the claims committee and rejected and then reanalyzed and accepted? Is that how this works?
Either of you, Mr. Lindeke, you had your hand up.
Mr. Chair and Representative Biskins, I may not do the right thing. I don't know. But my plan every year has been to draft for the chair in the House and for the chair in the Senate to offer a placeholder bill at the beginning of the session. And this one was a little bit later than the beginning of the session, but basically was a placeholder. And we had two meetings after that. And it was at those meetings, and we had two meetings in which we dealt with Mr. Hines's claim of being imprisoned for too long. Mm-hmm. Those other claims were all added after I drafted the placeholder bill.
In other words, it became as another term we sometimes use as the vehicle bill for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just so my clarification, then the claims that are on the delete all amendment were not at one time considered and rejected and then reconsidered. They are on here through first consideration. Is that correct, Ms. Representative Coonan?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Biskins, that's correct. Okay. You know, as with the committee goes through the claims, there are some of them that or in fact quite a few of them where we need more information, so we'll just lay them over, and so thus a lot of the final decisions are made towards, you know, the last couple of meetings. And that's kind of how this develops into what you see in front of you.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none then, Representative Murphy renews her motion that House File 3660 be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Representative Conan, you're still with us. Representative Thiessen, would you care to move the division report?
I move the Healthcare and Human Services Finance Division report for House File 3571, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Thiessen?
I move House File 3571, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Conan.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. And what this bill does is authorize a rate increase for publicly owned nursing facilities, and this rate increase is up to the full rebase payment rate. If the local government entity owning a facility agrees to pay the state's or the non-federal share of the rate increase, in other words, the state, the local unit of government would pay the state's share of the rate increase, and this is to, of course, take advantage of the federal money.
Yeah, it's in the fiscal.
Section 1 lays out the method by which local governments are to pay the state the non-federal share of the cost of the rate increases, and payments of the non-federal share will be made monthly to the commissioner, and these will be due on the 15th of the following month. This bill, the effectiveness of the bill is actually will start on January 2011, and the bill's effectiveness pretty much ends September 15th as in 2015, as October 2015 is when the rebasing is totally phased in at that time. For this alternative to phase in rebase payment rate, the rate will take effect, in, like I said, January 1st, 2011. And this is based on cost reports for the year ending September 30th, 2009. Future rate years rates will take effect on October 1st of each of those years and is based on the most recent available cost report. And the eligible nursing facilities that want to participate will need to make an application to the commissioner by September 30th of this year, 2010. And then once that is done, participation is irrevocable. If a nursing facility applies for this alternative to the phased-in rebate rate, rebased rate, and the result is no rate increase, no payment by the local government entity is required. And if the commissioner determines that the payments will cause the rates to exceed the state's Medicare upper payment limit, or for that matter, any federal limitation, the commissioner will reduce the payment rates and the non-federal share that is owed by the local government entity by the appropriate percentage. And in this bill, local government entities include cities, counties, and hospital districts. And that's the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any further discussion then on the bill?
It's not nonprofit.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Coonan, is the list that's on the fiscal note, page 3 of it, inclusive?
Is that all of them?
Representative.
Mr. Chairman, and Representative Solberg, I believe it is, although I haven't double-checked that for sure.
Well, the reason I asked is because Itasca County owns a nursing home, but it's managed by a nonprofit. So I'm just wondering, I think that they physically own it.
So
is there an exemption for the management of it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, and to that point, Health and Human Services Finance Committee, we amended the bill to include those that are, like you talked about in your situation, that are owned by a local unit of government or and are managed by some type of professional management. And so that they would be included, and now that you mentioned that, that list hadn't been updated since that amendment was added, so there probably are some others.
Thank you. It'd be good to see that list.
Yeah.
Okay, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Coonan, is there another bill that does this for nonprofits?
Representative Coonan.
Mr. Chairman, and Representative Murphy, no, there isn't. When Senator Cooley and I were working on this, we thought about trying to include those, but it would be a little bit trickier on where the money comes from and those types of things. With the time we had, we decided to start with publicly owned nursing facilities because it was actually the simplest, the easiest to construct this type of rate increase for. There is some interest in doing that. Of course, we're running out of time in this session, so I don't know if that's something we could look at the future. And honestly, I'm not even sure if it's really possible yet. We're still looking into that. But the straight answer, or the short answer to your question is no, there is no bill at this time.
Representative Murphy.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Coonan, tell me again where the additional money is coming from for the increase.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, the additional money is coming from, first of all, the local unit of government that owns the nursing facility, and they will be paying the state's share, and with that matching share, we, of course, will get the federal money that comes along with that. So the funding sources are actually the federal government and the local unit of government, and there is no cost to the state in this bill because the local government pays the state share.
So there, the local,
Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Coonan, so the local unit of government will be investing in those jobs then?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy.
Making that investment.
And that's right. And there are some local units of government that are already putting levy money into their nursing facilities to keep them open. And I'm sure that those facilities will be among the first to take advantage of this because then they can get some additional federal money along with what they're already doing. Of course, other communities will have to look at it and decide if this will work for them or not. This is volunteer. None of the nursing facilities have to do this.
Thank you.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Coonan, I appreciate the creativity with which you are trying to solve a real problem, and so I appreciate that. I also appreciate the fact that you are making it voluntary so that there's not a specific mandate on local governments. I am concerned, however, with an additional complexity and disparity being put into this financing system for long-term care. And you know, we've got all these different rates out there that are always of concern. You know, you have one facility trying to increase a rate because they're rural and they're feeling the pains. You've got another because they are a nonprofit. You've got other groups because they're local government owned. We've just got such disparities right now within our rate system. I'm concerned about creating an additional complexity. So, you know, it's just more of a comment related to the system at large. Again, I appreciate you're trying to solve a real problem. I'm concerned with an additional disparity and in terms of the increased cost for the private payers as well. But we can chat a little bit further, but I just want to put that on the table.
All right. Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, I appreciate that. And you are right. There is a lot of complexity in this. This bill, however, is a short-term issue. Once rebasing is fully implemented, this goes away. So at that point, this is meaningless. So it's short term.
Okay. Any further discussion? Well, seeing none, then Representative Thiessen renews his motion that House File 3571, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to Ways and Means. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. House File 3486, Representative Morrow.
When you get rebasing.
Okay.
You're the honor roll.
Let's see. This one deals with transportation normally Representative Champion makes those motions for the division report. The chair moves that the Transportation Policy and Finance Division report for House File 3486, the first committee engrossment. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. The chair moves that House File 3486, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. Representative Morrill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, this concerns the Greater Minnesota Transit Planning Process. This bill cleans up a number of provisions, clarifies provisions. It also directs MnDOT to assess total need in Greater Minnesota as opposed to 80% of need for public transit. MnDOT has been in agreement with the bill. Public transit advocates have been supportive of the bill. Mr. Chair, we're here today because there's a $10,000 fiscal note. I have communicated with MnDOT, and I have been told in writing that MnDOT can't absorb the fiscal note.
Yeah, and I received that communication from you the other day. So bill is before us. Any discussion? Okay, seeing none then, all those in favor of the motion that House File 3486, the first committee engrossment, be recommended pass and placed on the general register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Okay, we have, okay, we're going to skip Representative Simon's bill. He's in government operations, I guess, right now, and we'll go down to Representative Slawik. Representative Slawik, you want to move the division report?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I move the Early Childhood Policy and Finance Division report for House File 2760, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Slawik?
Yep. So move Senate File 2505 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, that is the motion, and then I understand you have an amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have the DE2.
Okay, Representative Slawik moves the amendment, yes. DE2. It's a fairly extensive amendment, so maybe you could give us a recap of the amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, as far as the amendment, we are taking the policy of the omnibus early childhood bill to the floor, along with the QRS funding, which is about $500,000 in federal funds, which is for the quality rating system. We want to match up with the Senate and their bills. We did an omnibus bill over here. They didn't. So by taking it to the floor, it allows us to match up with their bills.
Okay. So the motion is before us to amend. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, we have the amendment or the bill now as amended before us. Representative Slawik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As the Finance Committee, the things you need to know is this bill will split and go into the Health and Human Services omnibus bill as well as the Education Finance omnibus bill. For finance, there's a $7.5 million cut in the Health and Human Services side from the basic sliding fee program. What happens in that program is, for basic sliding fee, there is underspending done by the counties. They don't always use all their child care funds. The way it is in statute right now is they are supposed to take the unexpended funds and give them back to the state, and then it would go to the longest waiting lists and clear up and serve any children on those waiting lists. But in a year where we have a deficit, we go in and capture that money. So that $7.5 million will be used for the deficit. And then in the education finance part, where the bill will split off, will also travel the $500,000 that goes for the quality rating system. The other thing, members, you might want to know is we are directing the governor's Early Childhood Advisory Council to pick up several duties. I serve on that committee. As well as Representative Demmer. We want them to create an early care and education report card so we can tell what's happening in early childhood, to make recommendations on how to screen and assess kids, to offer more effective intervention strategies, and also develop recommendations to create an office of early learning. There was also a Kulik-Jackson bill included in the omnibus bill, which has to do with allowing teen parents to have their child care reauthorized on the school calendar schedule, which will allow for fewer disruptions of care for these vulnerable parents. So that is a bill, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any discussion then on the bill as amended? Seeing none, then Representative Slawik renews her motion that Senate file 2505 be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. I think you got at least one vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
people were quiet. Representative Simon is... Oh, there we are. Okay. And let's see, the chair, or do you serve on that division? No, you don't serve on Representative Kahn's division.
Yes, I do.
Oh, you do? Okay, would you care to move the division report then?
Sure. Mr. Chair, I move the House File 3748 be recommended to pass, or I'm sorry, I move the State Government Finance Division Report for House File 3748.
Okay, the motion is before us to adopt the division report. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Simon?
Mr. Chair, then I'll formally move House File 3748 be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register.
Okay, the motion is before us, so Representative Simon on the bill.
Thank you, members. This is a pretty quick bill. Doesn't need a lot of explanation. It just adds to the list of committees whose chairs or ranking minority members can request local impact fiscal notes. Right now, it's only the Tax Committee. Mr. Chair, I would imagine you'd like this bill because it would now include you and Representative Solberg. It would now include you. So now Representative Blincheski, Solberg, and Carlson in the House, instead of just Representative Blincheski, and of course the ranking minority members respectively, would also have the authority to request the local fiscal impact notes. I don't know if they're in your packets, members. In the last committee, we had letters of support from both the League of Minnesota Cities and from the Association of Minnesota Counties. If you don't have it, I won't bother copying it and burying you with more paper, but they do support the bill. There was no opposition in the other committee other than that Representative Pepin was disappointed that it didn't include her as ranking minority member of Representative Kahn's division. Other than that, she felt a little bit slighted, I think. But other than that, Mr. Chair, it sailed through, I believe, without any opposition. So I ask for your support.
Okay. The any questions on the bill? Well, seeing none, then Representative Simon renews his motion that the bill 3748 be recommended to pass placed on the General Register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. That brings us down to Representative Clark, House File 1993. This is one that we will be hearing today and getting it in good form, if you will, and it will be amended onto the Health and Human Services bill tomorrow. So we'll have a series of motions dealing with those alignments and what have you as we move forward. Representative Clark, would you care to move your division report?
Sure, Mr. Chairman, I'll move that the Housing Policy and Public Health Finance Division report for House Bill 1993, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, the division report is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Clark?
Then I'll move House File 1993, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, that motion is before us. And Representative Clark, you have an amendment, the A4 amendment.
I do, Mr. Chairman. It's amendment that's titled A4. So I'll move... The A4 amendment.
The amendment would put the bill in the form that you would like.
Right.
Representative Clark, just move the A4 amendment.
I do. I move the A4 amendment. Well,
I think they're passing it out now, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Okay, does everyone have it before we adopt it? Seeing none, then, now that everybody has the amendment, any discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, can we just have a second to read over the amendment since we were just given it seconds ago?
And maybe you could just explain the amendment then before we adopt it. Representative
Clark, Mr. Chairman, basically we're deleting a portion. The main thing is we're deleting a portion from the Administrative Services Unit, and then we're putting back in other language. This is actually a bipartisan.
I'm having trouble hearing you, Representative Clark. Maybe if, I don't know what the...
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. What the amendment does, the major thing it does, is to delete a portion of the bill that we had put in dealing with the Administrative Services Units for the health-related boards. We come back with a little different mechanism, and the thing that you might like about this is that this was a bipartisan move that we talked about in our committee to do this, and so that's a major part of this amendment. I think it's a couple of the little technical things that make that happen.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Then we have another amendment. Did you want to explain the bill before you take the Thiessen amendment, or
why
do you want
I
to take it now?
Just explain the bill briefly, and then.
Okay.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman and committee members, this is the bill that deals with our public health department. It's the omnibus public health bill. We do have a couple of portions here that deal with some services offered by the Department of Human Services as well. The committee had a target of $1.6 million to cut. And that the governor had recommended a little bit more than that. Our we take a lot of his recommendations with a few differences. Overall, the recommendations are a 3% cut to the Minnesota Department of Health operating budget. We did not tell them exactly how to do that. We're giving them some leeway. We do have a couple of exceptions. We did not continue the ongoing unallotments. The committee had our target let us not do that. And we did not cut funding from the Disability Council. The other thing that's important is what was really in the amendment, and that is that in contrast to the governor, where he does take money that is in the surplus from the various health-related boards, we put that back into a special fund that's within the health department. It's called the Administrative Services Unit, and we ask that the unit, we give them the authority to transfer money upon request to the various boards that are within their jurisdiction. And these are boards that deal with certainly a number of issues that we all care about, having to do with the professional boards. Sometimes they have liabilities and legal fees that they have unexpected costs for. This allows them to use that money for that and other shortages and staff. We heard about health and safety issues for some of the health boards. They just couldn't do their job. So we're allowing this money to stay. The money that they collect from their professional fees, again, these are people who actually pay fees to their professional board, allow them to have that within this fund. Then they have to report back to us how they spend that in the next year. This is a one-time transfer. Of other things that are in the bill, we do have a provision that deals with some changes that I think were just the governor and we agreed on that had to do with our youth camps. We didn't want them to be charged twice for some fees. Manufactured home parks, there was also a desire there just to have them pay only one base fee. The new part that's in here is a food support for children with severe allergies. We had testimony about some very serious issues with children who have just unbelievable in some ways food allergies, and so we want the federal want a federal waiver for supplemental nutrition assistance to have a higher guideline to make those families eligible. This is for children who have life-threatening allergies, and Mr. Chair, I'd be glad to answer any questions. I know there's another part. Oh, the part that's not finished. There was a correction on the fraud prevention grants. We have not resolved exactly how to handle that yet. We need to deal with that before it comes to the committee tomorrow. We are informed that there are federal dollars coming in for that particular provision, and so we don't need as much money as was in there that was recommended, and we'll come back with what that should be tomorrow. We just have been working on it for a few weeks now, but I think we should hopefully by tomorrow have some numbers.
Okay, and as I mentioned at the beginning of the presentation on the bill, this is one that we would be holding over until tomorrow to be incorporated into the Health and Human Services bill. Normally today we would be done with the bill and we would just incorporate it in tomorrow, but as Representative Clark pointed out, she's still checking on the federal funding question dealing with the fraud funding provisions. So we will probably have an amendment tomorrow before we incorporate it in. Any discussion on the bill?
I have an amendment.
Yes. Okay, are we ready to take your amendment then? That's the A-15 amendment?
A-15 amendment, and I'd like to, we need to insert the House file in here, and then page 10 after line 22 on line 1.2 of the bill.
Okay. And explain the amendment, yes, and then. That's House File 1993 is what you're inserting. Yeah.
Yes. And what the amendment does is says that reductions in appropriations to the Emergency Medical Services Board, that they have to be applied to the board's operating budget instead of any grants programs that they give out. What's I understand has been happening currently is that when reductions have been made, the reductions have been made to the grant programs and the operating budget of this agency has stayed whole, and what we want to do is flip that around. So that's the intent of the amendment.
Okay, and the motion is before us, and I should have pointed out, being that the amendment had the House file blank, and it was, you should insert 1993 there, but it was page 10 after line 22. Be sure that's inserted in the amendment as well and in the language. So any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Okay. Any further discussion on the bill as amended? Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Clark, I'm just trying to figure out the process on this. Some of this language looks like what we're seeing upstairs in HHS already. Is this different language? Is it the same exact language? Is it slightly different? I'm trying to figure out the two different paths and why they're going, or maybe it's just completely new stuff, but some of it seemed like it was in the bill, which I don't have. No.
Mr. Chairman, except for the portions I indicated, all of that is existing law. We're not changing any of those. I know it's big, long pages, but apparently the rule is from the revisor's office, when you change one line in a bill, you have to include all of the sections that came before it. And I believe that, is that what you're referring to?
I was just wondering if this was different. Just because some of the pages look similar, I'm guessing it's probably maybe not the changes, but some of the pages look similar to what we're looking at in HHS, and I was just wondering if this was included in part of that already or where we're at. But it looks like Representative Thiessen has an answer.
Yeah.
Representative Thiessen. Yeah, Mr. Chair, this is all different language than is up in HHS, it'll be rolled in.
Be added as an amendment.
Mr. Here. Marks.
Mr. Chair, members, just to mention one thing, Section 11, which is starts on page 11 and runs, I believe, all the way to page 24, this division deals with one part of the appropriations in children and economic assistance grants, and the Health and Human Services Committee may also be dealing with children and economic assistance grants. They ought to be amending different paragraphs within it, and we'll have to get that integrated when the bill's put together. But this division has certain accounts in that area. Health and Human Services has most of the accounts in that area.
And that's in part what Representative Clark was meaning, that
right.
We have to have all that language, according to the revisor's office, before us, even though they may be in the two divisions changing different, I guess that's the best way to put it, paragraphs.
Yeah, I'm sure why they were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes can be a bit confusing. Okay.
Yeah.
Representative Pepin, were you...
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Yesterday in Health and Human Services Finance, there was a section of the spreadsheet that was gone through and said, this belongs to another committee, so we're not going to deal with it here. Is this referring to that section, or is this something different or additional?
Representative Thiessen, have an answer to that.
That was actually the bill we just did, which was Representative Slawick's bill on child care stuff, I would imagine. And that bill just, you laid it over, I'm assuming, here, or passed it on, whatever.
We passed out all of the policy as a separate bill, and then the fiscal part of it will be incorporated.
Right. So that was...
Tomorrow.
That part of the budget was Representative Slawick's area.
Okay.
Tomorrow, and actually next Monday, I think some of that is education related as well. So her division actually is going to end up in three places. Policy on the floor, the education parts of it will be put in the, I think it'll probably be sometime next week, probably Monday, that we'll be taking up the K-12 finance, and tomorrow what's related to health and human services with the Slawick bill. I guess she's not here right now. But Representative Kiffmeyer, does that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, for now.
Okay. Part of this is necessitated, too, when we're doing some of these motions, is to align our accounts with the Senate as well. Okay, any further discussion on the bill? Representative Clark, then, would you like to make a motion to lay the bill over?
Mr. Chairman, I move that House Bill 1993 be laid over.
Okay, that motion is before us. And any discussion? I think everybody understands why. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
We now have House File 3490, Representative Holbert. And the chair moves that the Transportation Policy and Finance Division report for House File 3490, the first committee endorsement, be adopted. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The chair moves that House File 3490, the first committee endorsement, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Holberg on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do have an amendment, which I'll go over the bill first, but I do have a three amendment as well. House File 3490 is an attempt to look at total costs associated with rail lines and busways, similar to what we do for roads, and that we have a STIP and we plan out how much of the different funds are going to be used for maintenance, the central office at MnDOT, et cetera. This will allow us for planning purposes to look at existing revenues, how they're projected to be spent, and for planning purposes, figure out if we need additional money, what the plan for that might be. And so it's trying to put all of that information on all of the transit ways into a document so the legislature can be better informed when making decisions for funding.
Okay, on the fiscal note, it does appear there is a cost in 12. There is a tail. So has everybody received?
And Mr. Chair,
and everybody's received the fiscal note, just so
both
we're
Met
aware.
Council and MnDOT have said that they
aware.
Council and MnDOT have said that they can do these reports within existing funding levels.
Okay. And okay, any discussion on the bill? You said you have an amendment that you want to adopt.
Mr. Chair,
to adopt,
I believe
the amendment.
Representative Hausman has a.
Well,
okay.
if she'd like to do the amendment,
yeah,
either
just
way.
Let's maybe get the bill in the form that you'd like if you want to do the amendment, and then we'll have discussion on the bill. That probably is the most efficient way, I think, at this point. And that's the A3.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and this actually was, well, it's related to House File 3450, which was also sent to your committee. It tries to address some problems that have arisen as a result of the Urban Partnership Agreement. What they've done in the South Metro is they've put in the tolled lane. They've put double white lines that operate 24/7. That severely limit mobility in that corridor in off-peak hours. In addition, they expanded
the tolling times on the southbound, where it used to be 3 to 6, it's now 2 to 7, and there's very little need and congestion, especially in the 2 to 3 p.m. period of time. Initially, my bill would have dealt with those issues directly and prohibited the expansion of the tolling beyond the 3 to 6. MnDOT's concern is around the fact that the Crosstown project is still going on. The entire corridor isn't open, if you will. So as a compromise, they've agreed to add additional language to the existing urban partnership agreement report that they have to do anyway, to try and get some data on how this corridor is being used and how those infrastructure changes affect the mobility in that corridor. But just for example, right now there's a double white line that's so if you're in the far left-hand lane south of the bridge in Burnsville, you cannot get off on 106th Street without breaking the law. And that it serves a purpose during tolling hours, in that they only have so many monitors that read the transponders to debit the accounts to get in and out of that lane that's tolled. But on all the other hours in the day and on the weekends, when that lane isn't being tolled, the mobility is severely restricted. So if you're in the middle lane going behind somebody who's going rather slow, you can't get in the far left-hand lane to pass them for quite long distances. And it actually, somebody once said up here that some of the worst laws that we can enact are those that make the average law-abiding citizen break the law. And if you ever drive in that corridor, you will watch dozens of drivers consistently moving in and out over that double line, not even probably having a clue that they're breaking the law doing so.
Okay, and if you're going the other way, what happens? If you want to go on it, if you cross the other way?
Well, the south...
During non-toll hours?
Well, it's against the law to cross the double white line, and right now the southbound, the big issue on southbound is they start the tolling at 2 o'clock, and for the whole month of February, they only took in $80 between the hours of 2 and 3 o'clock, and so it's really not needed. And what happens is if they're tolling it, then the single car drivers are all smashed in the two right-hand lanes. But for example, if you get on to 35 at 494, you have to get almost to 90th Street before you can get into the left-hand lane 24/7 because of this double white line issue.
I do get out there once in a while, not often, just want to make sure I understand it, and I'd be one of those average citizens that might goof.
Well, and I would encourage legislators in the next year, anytime they're driving in the corridor, to take note of how it's actually functioning off-peak and how many movements are constrained as a result of this double white line. And if you're traveling between 2 or 3 or 6 or 7 southbound, it just seems very unnecessary to be tolling that far left lane when there really isn't any congestion to speak of.
Okay, any further discussion then on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify on the A3 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed.
And Mr. Chair, if I might, MnDOT has consented to adding these components to the UPA report under the existing UPA funding, and there's not an additional appropriation needed associated with the A3 amendment.
Okay, Representative Houseman, you were next up,
yes.
I think, after we adopted the amendment.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have distributed to everyone transit funding by source to show that in both metro area and greater Minnesota, where funding comes from. And it's as detailed as I've been able to determine federal, state, and local, and all the components of it, just to understand where currently we know where the dollars are coming from. What concerns me about the bill, one is timing, and the other is singling out one mode, and even singling out the metro area. If I think about the bonding bill and all the components of it, and I would even include something like higher education, where we might build a building, without a detailed financial plan about the operating of it. I think to sort of single out one source and ask for this much information puts a special onus on one component. Now, is everything working? No. And the reason I would argue in terms of timing of the bill is right now the legislative auditor is just beginning the study of this. And some of you may have already been contacted by them. I know I've spent a good bit of time with them. To ask some fairly detailed questions and do some work on this. That report is due in January. We will know far more at that point, and I have always been quite impressed with the legislative auditor's work, and we're able to make, I think, some very good decisions after that point. So I would suggest that for a couple of reasons that this bill not go forward right now. One is singling out one component of a budget, and the other is the timing where in January we will have much good information about the financing.
Okay, Representative Holbert.
Mr. Chair, and again, we have made some changes to the bill as introduced. It is not opposed by any of the groups that work in this area. And I don't think the characterization of singling out this for different treatment is fair, given that in the instance of road funding, we have STIPs. We show projected revenues. We show how it's going to be distributed. We have formulas for maintenance costs, how much of the incoming revenue can be used for bonding, for upgrades, et cetera. We have projects in the STIP, the 5, 10, and 20-year planning. And we have nothing like that in the area of transit. And I think that in order to kind of get our arms around this and some of the initial concerns about being too prescriptive or requirements for local government were removed from the bill originally. And I don't think that this having this information in any way negatively affects the transit study or the transit programming.
Okay, any further discussion on the bill? Representative Wagenius.
I would agree with Representative Hausman, but I would like to add one other thing. You look at projected costs. You do not look at projected savings. And the particular savings I am looking at is we are almost ready to go over the federal air quality standard for fine particulate matter. That will bring huge costs to our area, but in reducing pollution. But there is the reason you have a fine particulate matter standard is because it's extremely costly to people's health. The hospitalizations, I mean, it's all been documented. So to the extent that rail or any fixed brings down the fine particulate matter, they're huge savings. And you see from other studies that the health is worse next to a highway. So I think this is not a balanced study, and we need more balance in it. And I hope that if it goes forward, you put some balance in. But right now, I don't think it's ripe to go forward.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Kipmeyer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I look at this more from the point of view that it is limiting, and it limits its scope, and especially during this time, I think sometimes we get so broad that then it does become almost weighed down of its own weight, whereas, you know, making this to a limiting it to a very specific area and targeting it and having talked to all of the stakeholders that have to implement this, I think it seems like a very good way and to do this in a very good approach. So I'm hoping that we will take action on it today in a positive way.
Representative Biskin.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, we have a bill in front of us that gathers information to help us make decisions. You've got agencies who say they can do it within its existing budget. I don't know why we're afraid of good information. I hope you can support this.
Representative Hausman.
And, Mr. Chair, that's why I mentioned the other. I don't want to pay twice to gather information. And the legislative auditor right now has already begun the process and will finish in January. And if it's gathering information that we're starting on here, we would, in effect, by directing these agencies, be really paying twice for gathering information.
Okay, any further discussion? Being that the information we have was that it would be absorbed, instead of going to Ways and Means, it would go to the general register. So any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion defeated.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, members, we start tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, and we need to be done at 10. I've already talked to Representative Biskins yesterday about that. It'll be the Health and Human Services bill and then the Clark Amendment to it. And with that, we'll see you bright and early. Ways and Means, by the way, will be taking it up in the afternoon. That's why the early start.
I'm here now. Chunky. I'm here in town. Okay. It's okay.
Just wanted to make sure. I get an occasional email from Representative
there are times
Chunky on start time.
I think that meeting is adjourned.